a patent for National Council of Jewish Women Oral Project Number 2 on May 17, 1985. This is our second session, tape side 1. Anita, would you give me your name and address, please?
Anita Lopatin, 307 South Dittrich Street, and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
And your birthday?
Is 3/9/26.
Okay, let's see how we sound. Okay, now Anita, we went over some of the things you told us last time, and I want to know if you can remember anything about the way your grandfather went from the match business to the paper business. Did someone help him here? Did he?
No.
No, you have no
I have
history
no,
on that.
I have
okay.
no history on that.
Now, the other thing we'd like to know is, now you said your mother gave you a very tall feeling of being proud of being Jewish and of yourself. Can you remember any specifics? Or what gave you that feeling, or what she did? Did you emulate her? Or?
Well, I remember that she was always involved with Jewish organizations. And I remember my grandma, both grandmas and grandpas, were always busy with the baby home and the lecheminium and the burial society. What's the name of that one?
Hebrew Freedom Burial.
Yeah, the burial was...
The, I forget it. But the Burial Society. But particularly my Grandma Goldman was very involved with the baby home.
Okay. Now, let's go back a minute. You said that it disturbed you to know that your grandmother was in the Washing Society and the burial dead. Why did that disturb you?
It didn't disturb me that she was doing it. I knew somebody had to do it. But it's just something I guess I could never picture myself doing.
Okay, now what happened to the camp you talked about that you went to when you were a little girl?
Camp Suleiman.
Yeah.
Was in existence until World War II as a camp. Mm-hmm. And many of the men went to the Army when they came back. And if you remember correctly, they were a little older. When they came back from the Army, they all got married and had families of their own. And they continued to operate as a stock club, but realized that they could not take care of the camp anymore, so they closed it. Milton and I were already married at the point that they closed it.
When they closed it, has it been sold? It's never been reopened, that you know?
It was never reopened again.
All right. Okay. They have reunions or anything like that?
The men to this day, those who are still alive, I think have their stock club going.
Do you recall the names of some of the members?
Oh, I sure do.
Okay.
Al Greenberger, Nate Turk, Lou Klein.
Carden?
No.
Mm. You said Krieger last time?
Lou Krieger, Harry Krieger. Dr. Krieger. Those are the ones that stick in my mind.
Okay. All right. Last time we ended on the merge, the difficulty and the pain of merging the two groups. So do you want to start with that? That the two boards.
Ikes and the Y.
The Ikes and the Y. There was not a central board formed. The merger took place in 1960. There was not a central board formed until 1969. Where they did away with the branch board in Squirrel Hill, the branch board in East End. They did away with the Y board. They tried to do away with the thing called the Board of Governors at the health club, but they couldn't do that. That group was the one that was most set in its ways. And what the Board of Governors really became was a committee of the board. But it took many years for them to realize that they were only operating as a committee.
Now you said East End. Where were we in the East End? Is that that new building? Or?
In East End, the building fund started to take place to build East End in 60, I think that was the 65 campaign.
Mm-hmm.
The building was opened in 68 and closed in 70. And it was when Arthur Rockman came here, one of the first things that he realized was that that East End building simply had to be closed. The community could not carry it. But he realized that he couldn't come in as the new executive director and say, close that building. So what he did was, pardon me, very cleverly helped Federation to see that that building could not be carried. And Federation had this wonderful idea that they should have a study and really see what was going on. And they recommended the close of the building, and it did close in 1970. It was open exactly 2 years, to the day.
Hmm. Is that a big financial loss? Or?
Yes.
Who wanted it in East End? Exactly. Can you remember?
It was a few people who felt very strongly for community, who spoke so eloquently that they really did sway everybody.
Who was it?
It was Jerry Ostro and Harry Service and Fran Service and Nate Grummet and Barbara Shore.
Binstocks?
No, the Binstocks were never active at the center.
Interesting.
It was in plain fact that building should have never been built. That was the biggest mistake, because most cities that have Jewish populations much larger than Pittsburgh have one center, and here were we already building our third one. Cleveland, that has twice as many Jews as the city of Pittsburgh, only had one center at that time. So that was the fact. It shouldn't have been built.
All right. And so that the two groups merged. And they merged, did they close the one on the hill, or let's talk about that.
Oh, we left the hill before the merger.
Okay.
They did an outpost in... they came to Squirrel Hill in 1942 and began to operate a small program. The building on the hill became the Anna B. Heldman Center. Mm-hmm. And little by little, they pulled out of there completely. They bought, first they operated on Forward Avenue, and then they had a house on Murray Avenue. And in 19, it was either 48 or 49, they bought the first house at the corner of Forbes and Murray. And so they were operating a gym on Forward Avenue and operating clubs and classes and music school and everything else in one of the old houses. Then they little by little began to buy up the houses there. And in 1959, the Squirrel Hill building was opened.
What was your capacity at that time? Where did you start?
At which point
I know you
in time?
Were at one time you were switchboard operator, but what steps did you go through? What occurred then?
Okay, from 42 to 49, whatever I did was piecemeal. It was day camp. It was club leading. It was Emma Kaufman camp. And interestingly enough, I was at both agencies, and this was long before the merger.
What do you mean, both agencies?
I was either at the Settlement, or at Squirrel Hill, or at the Y.
So you were Oakland Hill and the Y.
Yeah, I kept something going the whole time.
This was as a paid employee, not a volunteer.
Always, yeah, little pay. Little pay, but I was always paid. One summer, I think I got $25. Mm-hmm. In 1949, my Jody was born. And 2 months after she was born, I was back up at the center, leading a club, answering the telephone. It's been in my blood since I was a little kid.
Tell me something about the agencies during the war years, 42 to 49, in between those times. What was their activities?
Who were the directors? Sidney Lindenberg was at the center. They stopped using the name Settlement when they moved to Squirrel Hill. That's part of what I was trying to tell you, when you can still go to the corner of Forbes and Murray and call it the Ikes. And what the Ikes stands for is Irene Kaufman Settlement.
Settlement.
Hasn't been that since 1942.
Mm-hmm. I still call it the Ikes.
Everybody does. It's Ikes and Emmaform.
That's right.
That's this community. And at the Y, was still Passy.
Tell us a little about him.
I think we talked about him a little bit last time. He was really a very warm and understanding and creative kind of guy. So it was very interesting to me that the last thing I did at the center was the Passamaquoddy Endowment Fund. And I somehow or other felt that I got so involved full-time because of music, and that was where I had really come from. And that was the last. I came with music and I left with music, yes.
How about the guy that was in charge of the education? Was it Rosenberg?
What
was
Rosenbaum. Mort Rosenbaum.
What do we know about him?
Do you want to leave Passamaquoddy?
Do you really want me to talk about Mort Rosenbaum?
Sure.
Mort Rosenbaum, to me, represented the fine line between genius and insanity. He was brilliant, but he was crazy. And he was literally the original dirty old man. He spoke I don't know how many languages. He was a humorist. He could quote any book from the Bible up and down. If he came to visit you, he came to visit you at 11 o'clock at night and stayed till 5 o'clock in the morning. That only happened at our house once because Milt wouldn't tolerate it after that. He was very demanding as a friend and very possessive as a friend. And so he consequently didn't have a lot of friends.
Used them up.
That's right. That's right. He was not a good agency person. At the time that he came here, the Isaac Cedar Educational Center, I mean, he did build it up and built it up fantastically, but he became his own worst enemy. And at a point in time, everybody realized he was operating his own shop and was not going to fit anybody's rules or anybody's pattern. So he had to be helped to leave the agency. It's probably interesting to tell if you're ever going to talk about him. He was a saver of everything, a collector of fine art. His office was a catastrophe. At one point in time, the fire department told us we either had to clean up his office or close our building. He couldn't find a chair to sit on. Things were stacked so high. He wouldn't let anybody clean it up, or I'm sure he didn't know what was there. In his home, I understand when he did die, and he had a stroke and passed away a few years after he left the center. When he did die, I understand his home was exactly the same way. I had heard from the people who did Meals on Wheels, because he did participate with that before he died, that he wouldn't allow them into his apartment. They had to leave the food on the outside on the floor, and they never saw him.
Was he responsible for starting what programs?
He was really responsible for building the Isaac Cedar Education Center, which in its day was the front runner of adult education. And the lectures and the classes, that's where everybody used to go.
Mm-hmm. I taught a course for him.
So am I...
Speak up.
Am I telling the truth about him?
And I taught a course, and I will tell you one thing it's exactly as you say, that I wouldn't have taught for anyone else, but he just insisted and convinced me that something I had to do.
He could just take the paper off the wall.
That's right. I didn't want to. I was over-involved. I was teaching at the university. Mm-hmm. He wanted me, and I went. Okay. So when he left, did the thing die, the education center die?
No. It went on for quite a while. The Isaac Cedar Education Center died when it lost its necessity to be, when everybody else in the community began to pick up the concept of adult education. There was no need for you to go to Oakland to participate because everybody began to do quality kinds of things. You know, it had to do with the shift in the community and the shift in priorities every place else too.
Well, now what about the music program? Who was responsible for starting the music series?
Herman Pasemanic.
Herman started all that.
That was Herman Pasemanic's idea and his dream. And it happened, and even after he retired, he became involved. He was still involved with the music society. That music society started the first year the building was open, which was 1926. It was fascinating to me that the year of its 57th anniversary, very quietly, Hines underwrote a concert.
Mm-hmm.
And never let us make big publicity out of it. But what they did was the 57th year was in Hines's Keystone. And very, very, in very small letters on the bottom of the program, and every publicity it would say, underwritten by the Hines Foundation.
It's interesting. Do we have more tape time? Right, now what? Okay, what's happening with the Music Society today?
The Music Society today is as active and has a wonderful program as it has always had. It did a little bit of a change. When it was first started, and Passy's original idea was to introduce new artists to Pittsburgh. And that could be a whole study in itself. I mean, everybody from Stern up and down, they've made their first appearances here in the city of Pittsburgh. And they tell a wonderful story. Marian Anderson made her first appearance on the Y Music Society, and they couldn't get a hotel for her to stay in. And she stayed in somebody's home. But the Music Society went through a period of time then when it had to change from only introducing new artists to combining the two. When Dolores Pasemanic died in 1954, that was Herman's wife, they named one concert in her honor, and that Pasemanic concert goes on to this day, looking for a new artist in this area to introduce to the Pittsburgh audiences. And that was the last thing that I did. It was an endowment fund that we raised in order to keep this Pasemanic concert going. It's now called the Herman and Dolores Pasemanic Concert. And it was really fascinating. Their son, Stephen, who is a rabbi now on the West Coast, that's the little boy I told you last time I dropped the chewing gum in his hair. He and his family were very active and participated very much in establishing this.
Mm-hmm. What year did she die? I didn't get that.
It was in the 50s.
Okay.
Has the music series been subsidized, or does it pay its own way?
It went through a period of time where they were subsidizing it, and that was Mort and Herman Reck was the lay
Mort
chair.
And Herman Reck.
Mort Rosenbaum was the staff person, and Herman Reck was the chairman, and he was the perennial chairman. And as was what happens when someone is involved too long. They were doing concerts, and they were neglecting the business end of it. And at one point in time, the combined board, and it was after the merger, was probably in about 72, the Music Society was given the edict: you balance your budget, or you go out of business. Now, at that time, Mort was gone. Alan Scheer had just become director of the Music Society. And I was his supervisor. I had just become his supervisor.
Excuse me, how do you spell Scheer?
S-H-E-R. Sidney Stark was the chairman at that time. Sidney Stark Jr. And we pulled that act together and saved the Music Society, and they've been selling out the house ever since. It was exciting.
Wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It was hard.
No, let's see, you had Passamaniac and you had another...
Jerry Arbeck.
Arbeck, was it? Were these all before Leon Rubenstein?
Leon Rubenstein was never the executive director.
What was his?
He was a branch director.
Oh.
And Leon is somebody that someday somebody should find out about. He was, and still is, a beautiful man.
Why don't you recommend him for interview?
Yes.
Okay.
Sidney Lindenberg, by the way, is still living, and so is Jerry Arbeck.
Well, were these branch managers also?
No. Sidney Lindenberg was executive director of the Irene Kaufman settlement.
After
Passy? No. Passy was the Y.
Oh,
dealing with the
he
merger.
He was branch.
Who?
Passamaniac. He was
what? Passamaniac was executive director of the Y.
Mm-hmm.
All by itself, when the Y was in business. Sidney Lindenberg was the executive director of the Irene Kaufman settlement.
At the same time?
Yes. When then Passy retired and Jerry Arbeck became executive director of the Y. When the merger occurred, there were two executive directors. Now, you and I both know that no creature can exist with two heads. And Sidney Lindenberg left not too long after the merger. It was probably within 2 years. And I give me a little bit of time on that. Sidney Lindenberg left, and Jerry Arbeck was the executive director until 1968.
What happened to Sidney Lindenberg?
Sidney Lindenberg went to Rochester. Now, Jerry Arbeck was the executive director of the merged agencies. Until 68, when Arthur Redman came.
No, Arthur Redman was director of the combined.
Yes.
That was after the merger.
It was Arthur that forced the merger of the boards. That was part of his coming here.
And now, let's go back to Leon.
Okay.
What was his impact at the branch? And who was at Ike's at the time? Lindenberg?
Lindenberg.
Mm-hmm.
And
where
Leon,
were you?
Where was I? I became friendly with Leon, and I got to know Leon through camp.
But at the branch?
Which year?
Where we're talking about when Leon came.
Leon was there much before me.
Mm-hmm.
He was the camp director. He was the day camp director. First he was Emma Kaufman camp director. And that was after I had gone to camp.
Who did he succeed? Was it Ziggy Kahn?
Must have been Julia Teller and Anna Perlow. I'm not sure on that. I have to double check that one. Because he was the director of Emma Farm, Emma Kaufman Camp. Trying to think when my sister Sondi went there. I'm playing years back. And she would have been, it has to be 35 years ago.
So it had to have been after Julia and Anna Perlow.
1949. What about?
But then Leon bought Camp Linwood. Not Camp Linwood. He bought Wood Echo. Artie and Sam had Linwood. There are two other people, and Sam Moll's still here.
Sam
Moll.
M-O-L-L. Right.
He was the guy who was head of the Playhouse at the Y. And who then he and Artie Hurwitz, who was the phys ed director at the Y, bought Camp Linwood. But Leon bought Camp Wood Echo. And what he did was he worked for 9 months of the year for the combined agency.
Rubenstein.
And then went and operated his camp.
Now I have a question. The Artie Hurwitz, what was the name of the camp in Sam
Wood Echo?
Linwood. That, and Linwood is the camp that is now Emma Kaufman Camp.
Rubenstein worked 9 months and then came private camp director.
Yeah. Wood Echo, which many of our children went to. I remember my Jody went to camp with him when she was 7 years old. Who had intention of sending a kid to camp? When they were seven, she came home one day and she said to me, I'm going to camp with Leon. He was just that kind of person. Mm-hmm.
Well, is this when there were long lines? We used to wait at Alderdice to sign up?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Was that because it was the only Jewish camp? Because it was cheap? It was the thing to do in Squirrel Hill?
I think it's a combination of all those things. Mm-hmm.
It was the only thing we knew about for a part-time camp.
It was. It answered its need in its time.
Mm-hmm.
And what began to happen is when it didn't answer that need anymore, it went through a little period of time as it started to grow too big and everything else, where it was competing with the private camps. And I think at some point in time, we had to make up our minds what we were.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that's because younger people became more affluent and sent their kids to more expensive camps?
Of course, in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where we went wrong, is we tried to keep those children instead of remembering what we were in business for.
What were you in business for?
The business of the Jewish Community Center is to serve the needs of the total community. To identify those needs, to prioritize them, and to meet them.
What needs? Can't be some normal needs.
You can't, but you have to set your priorities.
Would it be the Jewish needs, or?
Oh, I would hope so.
It'd be the. Okay.
And by the way, it took a long time for us to be able to say that we couldn't be all things to all people. That our prime aim had to be the Jewish community. And that was all in the thinking going all the way back to the settlement, where you were trying to make everybody an American, and then one fine day you had to realize that we were going to make everybody so Americanized that we weren't going to have the Jews anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the priorities in the center started to shift again.
We once saw a movie and they took Indian kids, shaved their heads, and tried to make them Americanized and lost all their culture. Remember
well,
that
sure,
movie?
That's mm-hmm. what happens. That's
okay.
what happens.
All right, now, all this was happening, you know, there. Now, the Ikes was merging,
we
the Ikes was growing.
We still
what
didn't
did
get
we?
To what Anita was doing her steps up during
yeah,
these periods.
Do you want me, do
I
you
want
me to categorize that?
I want you
Let's
to know
start.
What was Italy. Happening during the war. What was the, during, after 42, 45,
See,
in that area,
well,
what was the role of the center in wartime and such, and what were you doing particularly?
Okay, during the war, my prime association was with the Y, and the USO was at the Y, and Miriam Ephraim oversaw the USO, and there is that, oh, that's outside. Miriam Ephraim kept that in operation, and I participated in that. I would go on Sunday morning and serve food and dance, if you can believe that, at 9:30 Sunday morning. And it was really very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Shall we switch the tape? Well, where did these soldiers come from? Or where did these, were
they
Jewish?
Were the boys who were primarily, and most of them that did come were Jewish. They were the boys who were primarily stationed with the ASTP at Pitt. And there was a naval unit, the young men who manned the LSDs as they were manufactured in on Neville Island, they would come. And it was a very busy, very active place.
What was the first initials that you used, ASTP?
Yeah. ASTP. You're going to ask me what that stood for.
Okay. The other one was
LSD. It's training. LSD. No, LSD's the drug.
LSD.
LSDs were the ships.
LST.
They were
LSD was the drug. LSD. Land the ship tank.
That's exactly. Yeah. Excuse me.
Now we're going to turn this over.
What time do you have to leave?